to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show. It's Monday, the start of yet another week of insanity, courtesy of the U.S. government, the sweetest smelling government on planet Earth. And our webcam is running. The chat room is open. All systems are go, and we are ready to launch into another week of insanity. Before we get going there, I wanted to mention something in passing. In the chat room, I spent a lot of time talking with listeners of the radio show, readers of the website. We've been looking for sort of a collective name for all of the supporters and fans here, because I hate the name Ditto Heads for that other guy, Pills, what's his name. It seems very diminutive, and the chat room had taken to calling themselves Rivero's Rats, and I really didn't like that one either. And then over the weekend, somebody suggested Rivero's Rangers, and I think I like that one a lot. Of course, it means I got to find someplace where I can buy a whole bunch of these cute little berets and everything to hand out to everybody now. But I think that's now our official term for the fan base and supporters of the show and for the website, Rivero's Rangers. And that sort of has that image of proactiveness in dealing with some of the problems that afflict our country. So Rangers it is, and Rangers you all are, and I think that's much more respectful of the audience of our show than calling you ditto heads or some such nonsense that. All right, phone lines are open. The number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Donovan is in the control room, twiddling the dials, averting disaster by his own admission, and we're going to get right into things here. The economy is just really, it's a joke. It really is a joke. You probably heard on this news break how they're proclaiming the real estate market is on the rebound because home sales are up. That is not entirely accurate. They are up by some measures. By others, they are down. We'll get into that a little bit further. But the reason home prices might be stimulated is that people in California and Utah and a lot of other places, they're cutting home prices. They're selling below what the house is worth. They're basically fire saling the housing prices, and of course you're going to sell more houses because now more people can afford them. But the banks don't want that. The banks want houses to be as expensive as possible because that way you have to borrow more money and they get more interest on the loans. If homes were really easily affordable, you know, that would be great for we the people, but terrible for the mortgage lending industry. The banks and the mortgage and even the government that bases property taxes on housing values, they want you to spend your entire life just struggling to pay for a place to live. That is the method of economic enslavement in this so-called land of the free and home of the brave. If houses were inexpensive, if you really were paying just the cost of building that building, you know, we'd have a lot of money left over, and we could relax and have a much better lifestyle. But then that would anger the banks, and we can't allow that to happen. So anyway, moving right along here, I noticed that Bill Clinton was talking about obesity, and I agree, obesity is a bad thing, except, of course, during times of famine, all of a sudden you're socially very popular. But he was going in there talking about how in our society it seems to be the people who are less financially well off who seem to have the most trouble with obesity. And he's actually correct. I'm stunned to find myself in agreement with something that Bill Clinton is saying. But he's absolutely right, because it is the less financially privileged people who are eating the cheap, junk, manufactured bulk food, the Soylent Brown, Soylent Orange, Soylent whatever, that is being sold at the supermarket, that is laced with aspartame and monosodium glutamate and synthetic bovine growth hormones and high fructose corn syrup. Whereas wealthy people tend, as a class, to really go the more organic, pure food, no chemicals route. And as we have reported many, many times on the show, the obesity epidemic in the United States is not related to diet and exercise. It is very provably linked to the chemicals that are in the food being sold in our supermarkets. And again, MSG makes you eat more than you really need to be satisfied. Aspartame, supposed to be a diet aid, actually makes you crave carbohydrates. Synthetic bovine growth hormone, any that is not metabolized by the cow prior to the beef or dairy products being harvested, goes into your body and will react with your body the way it was reacting with the cows. It'll simulate the putting on of weight. And finally, high fructose corn syrup, my latest villain that I've gotten out of my life, that one triggers a tremendous sugar insulin imbalance that can look to some people like diabetes and especially hypoglycemic form of diabetes. And one other thing I've noticed that's really, really weird, ever since I got the high fructose corn syrup out of my life, I had been having some tendon issues in some of my joints, like my knees and elbows. That's gone away. It's just amazing. It's just, you know, the more I get rid of these chemicals, the better I am feeling, and that is really a very good thing. Now, getting back to the economy here, and we're talking about home prices and mortgages and everything. There is an estimated 977,000 mortgages in California are toxic. What do we mean by toxic? It means that more money is owed on the mortgage than the house is actually worth. So there's no equity in the home. There's no surplus equity for refinancing, for bill consolidations loan. All of those products are completely null and void right now because there's no equity to play with because the housing prices are continuing to crash. Okay? And we're seeing, you know, we're coming up on the next round of adjustable rate mortgage adjustments. These are periodic. And every time we have another one of these revaluations, the interest rates go right through the roof because they're gouging the people who are making payments to make up for the ones who are not. By the way, I want to take a moment here for just a second because I was going around the TV dial over the weekend here, and there's a whole new spate of reality shows, and I understand the allure of a reality show for a lot of these TV networks compared to a regular produced drama or comedy or even a decent documentary. Reality shows are very inexpensive to produce. All you need are a bunch of cameramen and a good set of editors. And by the way, reality shows live or die on the skill of your editing teams. So they're vastly underappreciated on these shows, by the way, the editing staff. But I digress. The reality shows are very inexpensive to produce. They fill up the time slots. It's, you know, a lot of money for the producers and so forth, and not much else is being spent on actors or set design or costume or anything else. Some of the shows are very interesting. Some of them are a little bit lame. Two that I saw in passing, I couldn't bear to stay with them, but I saw in passing, there's a show about a pawnbroker in Seattle, my old hometown. And then there's another one about a crew of repossession agents where they go out and they're repossessing cars and stuff. And I thought the one about the parking enforcement was a little bit out there. But these two, and I realize it's a sign of the time because we're all dealing with foreclosures and repossessions and having to sell our most precious personal possessions. And you go into a pawn store and you say, God, I think this is worth $1,000. And says, well, that may be your opinion, but I'll give you $100 for it. You know, and just to see these people humiliated because they've attached such emotionality to a particular piece of whatever it is they got from their mother or grandmother or whatever, and then you find out it's just a piece of junk, at least in the eyes of the pawnbroker. And who wants to watch that, really? And I just wonder if the TV networks don't have any sensitivity to what's going on right now that they're airing these things. I don't expect these shows to last. I've been wrong before. I have been wrong before, and I might be wrong this time, but I'm not going to watch them. I absolutely cannot stand to watch them. I don't like reality shows in general. I've caught a couple of episodes of Whale Wars, and I watch Dog the Bounty Hunter mostly to make sure that I'm not in it on any given day. So, but these two about pawn shops and repo guys, I don't know. It's a sign of the time. It's something that a lot of people are going through. I don't know. I don't need to have my face rubbed in it. I really, really don't. I really, really don't. Now, apparently, real estate in Utah is in serious trouble. Utahns are selling their homes for less than their appraised value just to get out from underneath the mortgages. So it's just a huge, huge problem. I mean, they're trying to tell us that home sales are picking up, and yet we're still seeing home prices dropping. So somewhere there's a disconnect. Maybe we're being fibbed to again about the economy. Nah, the government wouldn't do that. How silly. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors, 800-259-9231, and we will be right back.
Public Radio.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're just picking up here on the economy. Now, here is something that you need to sort of get your mind around here. You want to talk about how badly we are all being screwed, for lack of a better word, by the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Congress, having to do with the Troubled Asset Relief Program, also known as TARP. You remember in those days long ago, last autumn, when they were telling us it was maybe going to be $800 billion. Maybe. Just $800 billion. Hardly anything to sneeze at. And then it started kind of growing, you know, like a giant fungus taking over the financial centers of the country. And that final number of commitments to save the financial system, to fix the financial system, basically to bail them out of the derivatives, kept growing. And then it was up to like $9 trillion. And then they were saying 13 and then 14. Okay, according to Neil Barofsky, the Special Inspector General for the Troubled Asset Relief Program, in a report released today, the total potential federal government support for TARP could reach up to, drumroll please, $23.7 trillion. $23.7 trillion. I will leave it as an exercise for you to get out your pocket calculator, if it'll actually hold a number that big, and divide it by the population of the United States, 300 million, to see how much you're on the hook for, potentially. They are spending money in Washington, D.C., faster than we, the American people, could ever possibly pay it back, is the bottom line. So I am going to predict here that we're going to see not only a huge surge in tax resistance, tax noncompliance, I think we're just going to see the American people completely dispirited, and they're just going to give up. Why should we work ourselves to death to try and pay the bills of a government that is so obviously intent on spending it faster than we can possibly earn it? And same government that gave away our jobs, manufacturing jobs, to other countries. Same government that repealed the Glass-Steagall Act that was supposed to rein in these abuses by Wall Street. It's been open season on the American people for the last 10 years, and now we're feeling the effects of it. And speaking of open season here, because of the public furor from you, the American people, Congress is finally having to sort of acknowledge that there may be an issue with this high-frequency program trading as conducted by some of these privileged, special brokerages, such as Goldman Sachs. We have been reporting for weeks now that the secret of Goldman Sachs' sudden profitability in the wake of accepting all of this bailout money, all of a sudden Goldman Sachs is profitable in a country that's lost its manufacturing. That doesn't make any sense at all. And the secret is they have set up these high-powered computer systems that are simply buying and selling and buying and selling, catching stocks just on a few pennies move up or down, and, of course, churning up gargantuan brokerage fees in the process, which are paid for by their clients. And the losses are borne usually by the companies whose stock is being traded. And Goldman Sachs is pulling $100 million a day out of the stock market, for which they put nothing back of any value. We also found out, because of the special high-speed data links that they have between Goldman Sachs and the New York Stock Exchange to sustain that kind of bandwidth, that Goldman Sachs is actually able to see other brokers' trades before they are committed. And a lot of people said, that's just flat-out cheating. That's like standing on the floor of the exchange and peeking over the shoulder of the guy next to you to see what he's getting ready to offer for your stock and then adjusting your price up a little higher because you know he's got room to move into it. It's definitely not an honest way of doing business. And dishonesty seems to be lying at the heart of pretty much every fantabulous success story we're seeing out of Wall Street right now, whether it's Bernie Madoff with the loot or Goldman Sachs program trading or any of these other scams that have come to light lately. Well, because you, the American people, and congratulations on this one, you've made a big stink about this. First of all, the corporate media finally started carrying the story and talking about this. It moved from the blogosphere to the corporate mainstream media. Now it's moving to Washington, D.C. Congress, they love a good scapegoat, somebody that they can blame the economy on right now. And Wall Street may have just set themselves up to be the fall guy. Because we all know there's a big crash of some kind coming in the next 2 months. All the experts are saying it. They're talking temporary bank shutdown. They're talking all these other situations. It's like musical chairs. They're running out of money. They're trying to find somebody that they can pin the blame on. If they could figure out how to blame Iran for it, they would. They can't. Now everybody's looking for somebody to take the blame. And of course, the blame goes all the way around. It's Wall Street and Washington, D.C., and the corporate CEOs across America. It's Harvard Business School is partly to blame because of scientific management and the MBA and a culture of managers with a total disdain for the actual process of manufacturing. So the blame gets spread around all over here, but politics being what it is, they're looking for somebody to finger the blame on. Might even be Goldman Sachs. Might be the Federal Reserve. A lot of people think the Federal Reserve, by its very nature, is the result of our financial hardships right now. So everybody is looking to put the blame on somebody else. The blame-shifting regatta is well and truly underway, and there's a huge gold loving cup to the winner of that one. Now, getting on down here, speaking of the culture of corruption, which is pervading apparently our entire society, and that is the lesson coming out of this scandal in New Jersey / New York. The mayors of Hoboken, Secaucus, Ridgefield, the Jersey City deputy mayor and council president, two state assemblymen, blah, 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 member of the cabinet of the state governor, whole bunch of rabbis got caught up in this thing. Vast money laundering operation, corruption, bribe taking, bribe giving, selling counterfeit merchandise, organ trafficking. It is a huge scandal, and it should be the scandal of the century so far. Everybody's trying to downplay it for two reasons. You know, we're seeing obviously a tremendous amount of pressure from Israel's supporters and the Jewish community. They don't want another scandal coming hard on the heels of Bernie Madoff with this organ trafficking situation. And of course, the political system as a whole is very concerned that any more wide-ranging corruption scandals further weaken the legitimacy of the entire government structure as a whole. They're okay with like a Rod Blagojevich or a Bill Richardson getting caught in a pay-for-play scandal because that's just the one guy. And Sarah Palin's got her little ethics thing she's looking at as well. But when you have an entire organized network involving dozens and dozens of politicians working together to enrich themselves at the expense of the taxpayers, that calls into question the very legitimacy of the entire system of government in the United States. So they're trying to push this one down. But it's not going to go away. It's big news all around the world, especially the organ trafficking. Because this guy that they've arrested, they know he's been doing it for at least 10 years. They have only his word so far on where the kidneys came from. We don't actually know where they came from. We do know because of the economy. There are a lot of young and very healthy homeless people in the United States of America, and some of them can't be found anymore. So we got to keep going on that one. Real quick, a U.S. professor at University of California, Berkeley, apparently tried to warn the FBI a year ago about the organ trafficking, and the FBI ignored her. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here. Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And I'm going to get back to this thing about the FBI in a little bit. But we've got a caller on the line, and I want to get to him first. So, Stephen in Oregon, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, thank you, Mike. I'm going to be brief because it's too hot to have a conversation. So here, anyway, in fact, I wrote my brother today on an email because he's in Arizona. He went for a hot one this week, and I used one of your comments because I really like your comments. Is that thump you're hearing is Al Gore having an orgasm? Now, that thing is, it's always this hot at this time of the year, and what they don't realize is I have the coldest, longest winter I've ever seen since I've lived here. But anyway, in the economics, I have really two brief questions to ask you. And the first one is, I was listening to a couple of guys talking, and they have families and jobs, and they're okay, but they're talking about how their drinking was, you know, kind of messing them up because they've been doing it for years, and they wanted to stop, and they've been trying everything they can't quit, they see it, whatever. And as I was listening to them, I guess that's with any addiction, I started thinking, I wonder how many average Joes or even above the average Joes are the same way with Wall Street. And can you comment on that?
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. Money is addictive because if you have it, you get pleasure from it, and you want to have more of it. Otherwise, you know, once somebody had enough money to take care of themselves and their loved ones for their entire lifetime, why go on working and gouging and scraping? You know, clearly there's an addictive process here. And at some point, like Bernie Madoff, we need to start doing interventions on these people because they're, you know, they may be doing very well for themselves and their families, but they're causing great harm to the society around them.
Thing though is they're starting to see that it's damaging, but they they'll see all the signs, for instance, you know, all the signs on the stock market, but they can't. Just the same way as an alcoholic, a heroin addicted, they see all the signs to stop, but they can't, and they continue to do it. Does that make
sense? Yeah, it does make sense, except you're forgetting one thing. Most of the people who are in that income bracket where they're making gobs of money, they cling religiously to Adam Smith's philosophy, which was that being greedy is okay because no matter how you acquire your money, if you're being personally greedy, somehow the entire system is moved forward as a result. Now, John Nash absolutely proved that that was not true, but the people who are really greedy, they choose whose feet they're going to worship at, and they still worship Adam Smith, even though I think the current circumstance shows that Smith was absolutely wrong.
But do you think that, I understand what you're saying, but there are the ones that really aren't all the rich, and I understand where you're coming from, but there's more of the average Joes. And I don't mean like the 50,000, maybe the 100,000. I don't know what the number is. But
you're talking about the day traders.
Yeah, maybe them.
Well, that's a gambling addiction. That's an, you know, the Wall Street's an, yeah, it's a gambling addiction. It's not, right. It's not so much the addiction to money. It's hooked on the adrenaline. It is. It's online legalized gambling. And they're suckers for being there. You know, the Wall Street brokerages are making tons and tons of money. I don't know anybody who's been in day trading who's made any significant amount of money. And I know a lot of people who've been with these online trading services who've actually lost a huge amount of money. But they're there. I mean, even if you look at the commercials, they never talk about profit and loss or anything. They don't talk about having risk capital to play with. It's always the action. And isn't it cool? I'm trading with China. And look at this. I got four monitors. And am I not really cool to be throwing my money away at this thing?
Hey, got one last one for you, and I'll listen to you offline. There's a two-part question. Is number one, the treasuries and bonds that they're selling this week. And I would like to hear you, because I'm kind of not learned in this area very well. I'd like to hear what you have to say. I saw a lot of them sold a lot of these three-month treasuries and bonds. I don't even hardly know the difference. The treasuries and bonds, three-month ones were the biggest number that went out. What are they going to do if they want to trade them in 3 months from now? And then my other question was, could the Federal Reserve, do you think the Federal Reserve could take, like, the bailout money where they're printing off money and buying their own treasuries to show, see, people are buying treasuries.
And oh, yeah.
If you would spend just a minute, if you don't mind, explaining what you know about bonds and treasuries, I'd really appreciate it.
Okay, well, just in brief here, when the U.S. government needs to borrow money, they do it by selling these these treasury bonds, you know, and some of them are very long term, and as you say, some of them are very short term, and that's getting to be a problem because the short term treasuries have a higher interest that must be paid on them. And as you pointed out, 3 months down the road, if they're not able to roll them over and find somebody else to hang on to them for another 3 months, we start looking at some serious cash shortfalls. Yes, there has been a practice lately where the Federal Reserve is simply printing up the money to go and buy the government debt for itself. And the problem with that is that this is adding inflationary pressures to the dollar, and it's exactly the kind of practice China was saying, stop doing that because you're making the dollars we hold worth much, much less by this, and we're approaching the point where we're going to have to start dumping to protect ourselves. So it's a dead-end practice, and it's all very fancy creative bookkeeping to sort of conceal the fact that our government doesn't know how to get out of the mess they've created. They don't know how to bring back the manufacturing jobs that we had anytime soon. And they, you know, they don't know how to unwind this derivatives mess that resulted from the repeal of Glass-Steagall. None of them has the courage to do what it would really take to fix things, which is slash federal taxes in half by ending this whole war machine. And secondarily, to have the U.S. government start issuing its own currency again, as it is authorized to do under the Constitution and under John Kennedy's Executive Order 11110. But there's an article we put up at whatreallyhappened.com today where they're absolutely saying that Franklin Delano Roosevelt is heralded as this hero that pulled us out of the Great Depression, but even he was scared to try and start issuing his own currency again because of his fear of what the Federal Reserve might do to him as a result. So what we need right now in this country are real leaders with the courage to stand up to the Federal Reserve, and we don't have it. We've got another bought and paid for puppet who looks really good in a suit and can read the teleprompters on cue, and that's all we've got. And as long as that's all we've got, I think we're still on that path to the point where the U.S. government and the U.S. economy are going to crash and burn, and frankly, I think we're overdue. I can't wait for it to happen, and I know things will be very rough after that happens, but then we'll form a whole new government. We will learn from the lessons of Russia after the Soviet Union collapsed. We'll reform a new government. We'll kick out the oligarchs, and things will be much, much better than they are right now. All right, so that was Stephen in Oregon. All right, I want to go back here to the situation about the organ trafficking, and first of all, I want to clarify something. I've gotten so much email on this one. And some of it's very nice and supportive, and some of it is just, you know, why are you always picking on the Jews, you goddamn anti-Semite, and all the rest of that stuff that's going on there. Now, I actually think transplanting is a good way to save lives. Okay, and I have on my driver's license, I've got an organ donor card. If I'm killed in a car wreck, they're allowed to grab anything that they think is useful and transplant it on to somebody else to save their lives. That's just, and donate whatever's left over to a medical school because even medical students need a good laugh. That being said, there is a proper way to do transplants from accident victims, and through the donor list and to the hospitals, and it's all above board, and everybody's on a waiting list, and they wait their proper turn, and I know some people die before they can go through the waiting list because there is a shortage of donors. That being said, obviously I disapprove of this black market organ donation system, because what they're talking about, and even Haaretz is saying that this guy they arrested in New Jersey is part of this whole money laundering ring, was basically finding people in very economically destroyed areas and offering them huge amounts of money for them to donate a kidney. And Haaretz is saying that this Rosenbaum actually held some of his donors at gunpoint when they tried to change their minds. And so it's getting really ugly out there. And they're basically, the point of this story was, there's a professor at UC Berkeley, Nancy Shepherd Hughes, and she's been researching this problem for years, and it has been a problem ongoing for years here in the United States. She warned the FBI a year ago what Rosenbaum was doing, and the FBI did nothing. They are useless. We're going to follow up on this after we come back from these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
Then you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And just real quick to go back on this situation. We have a UC Berkeley professor who's been studying the problem of illegal black market organ trafficking in the United States, tried to warn the FBI a year ago what Rosenbaum was up to. And the FBI wasn't interested. Just really didn't care. This seems to be following a pattern of just willful government covering up of certain kinds of crimes. The U.S. State Department, in 2004, 5 years ago, issued a formal statement saying it would be impossible to conceal a clandestine organ trafficking ring in the United States. That's 5 years ago, and we now know that Rosenbaum was running his operation for at least the last 10 years. Now, this takes us on to this story real quick here about how the FBI is trying to close down the anthrax letters investigation after 8 years. They're trying to say that Bruce Ivins was the culprit on the basis of some beakers that may have been in contact with the strain of anthrax used in the letters. They have absolutely no evidence that Bruce Ivins was involved in the anthrax, other than they've paid a bunch of scientists to say, well, yes, some of the equipment in his laboratory may have been touched by this virus, by this this bacteria, the anthrax spores. And this is completely nonsense, and I'm in agreement with Bruce Ivins' lawyers. We are supposed to be talking about a guilty person, not guilty lab equipment. And the FBI has gone out of its way to avoid investigating a real suspect. Now, imagine for a moment you're the FBI, and you've got all these people. You've got Stephen Hatfield, and there's really no evidence he did anything, but you make his life a living hell. Then you've got Bruce Ivins. There's no evidence about him either, but you got to find a scapegoat. You got to put the blame on somebody here. And then over here, over off one side, you've got Dr. Philip Zack, who worked in the same laboratory, who was caught on the surveillance security system going into the laboratory where the strain of anthrax used in the letters was kept without proper authorization after losing his job over a racially motivated attack on an Egyptian coworker who was also briefly on the suspected list of culprits because of some anonymous letters that were sent to the FBI about this guy. Okay? And you've got this guy that has actually been caught on surveillance and security systems going in there, and nobody talks to him? Nobody's investigated him. Nobody has torn his life apart the way that they did Stephen Hatfield and Bruce Ivins. This is the FBI who is doing this, who is pointing everybody in the wrong direction. They created this term, person of interest, in order to ignite a media frenzy on a designated patsy while intentionally avoiding the one person the actual physical evidence in the case points toward. The FBI is totally useless. They are totally useless. They are not about law enforcement. In fact, there was this wonderful little program on, I saw it on TV and I can't remember the channel, and they were talking about J. Edgar Hoover, and the secret of the FBI's success all through these years isn't law enforcement. It's that they are in a position to blackmail every politician in America with the information they collect on their sex lives. It's a well-organized blackmail operation with the U.S. government seal on it. And, of course, I remember what the FBI was doing back during the 60s with COINTELPRO against the peace movement and against the Native Americans and against the early feminists and against the civil rights movement. This is what the FBI is all about, and this case just proves it again. So, Anyway, we're going to go to the phones here. We've got Don in Maine. Aloha, Don. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hey, Mike. Thanks a lot. I just had an idea I wanted to share with you. I think it could work out pretty well. It's has to do with the healthcare situation and also with financing your operation. Mm-hmm. And this is how it's going to work. All the people in this country who exercise are going to be required to exercise more. And then you'll set up a new corporation in which you will sell credits to those people who do not wish to exercise.
I love it.
And then you see, since the aggregate amount of exercise being done is appropriate, we'll all be better off.
I love it. I absolutely love it. We got to come up with a certificate. The exercise credit.
Yes, indeed.
I love it. That's a great idea.
Love
I thank
it, man.
You for that.
Keep it up.
Okay? You got something else? No, I guess that was it. All right. Well, Don, that's a wonderful idea. We're going to have to come up with that. The exercise credit. I'm going to be a huge customer of those things myself here. My motto about exercise is no pain, good. Let's see. Going to the email box here, somebody, a listener, was listening to the show. I was talking about obesity and poor people. You and Bill Clinton are both right. Boy, there's an episode right out of the Twilight Zone just in on that one. You and Bill Clinton are both right in that proof poor people can only afford to buy the cheap processed foods. I am in the poor sector, and I was obese last year. I have lost 60 pounds in the last 12 months because I stopped eating processed foods. Now I eat mostly rice. Rice is good for you. My son eats nothing but wieners and processed sausages. They are processed. Despite all the running around he does, he is slowly putting on weight. He won't eat rice. If more poor people ate rice, the obesity level would drop drastically. Rice is definitely a good thing, but you got to have a really good balanced diet. But definitely the problem is the chemicals that are in the food. If you look at those packages of processed foods, and you read the chemicals on there, you have no idea what they're doing to you. And as far as the food manufacturers are concerned, if it doesn't outright kill you, then it's got to be safe for you and it's okay to sell and put in the food for you. And the problem is they're discovering that these drugs, these chemicals, are favored by the food manufacturers because they make you eat more. Then you will buy more, then they make more money off of you. The worst is monosodium glutamate, which is billed as a flavor enhancer. And it is so popular with processed food makers. They'll put it in food, and they will disguise it with all kinds of different names. Autolyzed yeast extract, hydrolyzed something protein. It's even been called simply flavor enhancement on some packaged foods. Some 30 different euphemisms for the same chemical. And what it does, it does make food taste better. But it also suppresses the signal in the brain that says, I have had enough to eat. Now, when scientists want to have overweight rats for obesity studies, normal rats won't overeat. They won't let themselves become fat. They have a mechanism in their brain that says, I've had enough for what I need right now, and they'll stop eating. But if they dose the rat's food with monosodium glutamates, then the rats will just eat and eat and eat and eat, and they'll get nice and plump, and the scientists can do their study. That's the effect the chemical has. Monosodium glutamate is actually prescribed as a medication in cases of anorexia or in elderly patients who've lost their sense of taste and smell and food is no longer as enjoyable. They'll dose their food with it to make sure they're taking in enough calories per day. It's used as a medication for this thing. And they put it in food so that you will eat more and spend more and the food companies will make more money off of you. Okay? I mean, if you really think about it, it's a little sick. We live in a world with mass starvation, and American food manufacturers are putting chemicals in the food to make Americans eat more and use up more food. And really, you've got to stay away from these things. If you can't pronounce it, don't put it in your mouth, is the short version. And I never used to think of myself as being any kind of a real health nut. But ever since I have gotten rid of all these chemicals, and the most recent was high fructose corn syrup, I'm feeling so much better, and I am too, am losing weight, and I'm not even really working at it, and the energy is coming back, and I'm feeling really good. So you got to pay attention to this stuff, because just because the government says it's okay to sell you something at the supermarket doesn't mean it's really what's best for you. And we did not evolve to eat chemicals. We evolved to eat other living things. Bananas, coconuts, asparagus, cows, elk, whatever else, you know, whatever we could grab and eat, that's what we evolved to eat. All these synthetic chemicals, our bodies aren't really equipped to handle them elegantly, and they cause a lot of problems here. All right, so, well, my goodness, how that one flew by. Thanks to everybody who called in. You make it a much more enjoyable show for me. And so, Rangers, as I say goodbye from this episode of our show today, stay safe, stay well, stay healthy, and hug your loved ones, drive carefully. And until tomorrow, at the same time here on the Genesis Communication Network, Aloha, America.